Hello, and welcome to the BCMA podcast. Whether you want to admit it or not, summer is already coming to a close. Yes, that's right, schools are about to welcome back hordes of new and returning students, all abuzz with excitement from all the cool museums and galleries they visited over the summer. Okay, that last part is maybe just our dream, but either way, education is on everyone's minds these days, whether in the classroom or here in the museum field. This month, the BCMA podcast is going to school on education. We'll hear from Jen Garner in Kelowna about the Kelowna Museum's Salmon, Saskatoons, and Storytelling program. Aaron Henshaw is here to talk with Michael Schwartz about empathy in museum education. Chelsea is back with a feature on the Nanaimo Museum's Far From Home program, and I'll chat with Lorenda Calvert about how educators in the Lower Mainland are working together for support and innovation in their field. So sharpen your pencils and get your notebooks ready. It's time to learn. Education programs for school groups are a mainstay in museums these days, but they've probably changed a bit since you were in school and were let loose by bored teachers looking for something to do at the end of term. I talked with Kelowna Museum's Education and Programming Coordinator, Jen Garner, to learn about the Salmon, Saskatoons, and Storytelling program and how it has developed since it first ran in the 1970s. All right, so Jen, can you tell me a little bit about the curriculum program that you're running called Salmon, Saskatoons, and Storytelling?
Sure thing. So this is a program that Kelowna Museums works in partnership with School District 23 and very closely with the Aboriginal Education Department of the school district. It's available to all the grade 3 students. So the classes, you know, they have their few field trip dollars. Well, they don't have to worry about that to come and do the program because the school district pays for it. Now, the overall theme of the program is traditional land use and resources of the Sealk Okanagan people. So it's very, very local. We use storytelling throughout the program, which is great for a grade 3 class. We use puzzles as a way for them to explore the galleries. We have a recreated winter home that an elder helped us build inside the museum. And as I said, it's a partnership that's been going on between us and the school district for quite a long time.
Cool. And so tell me a little bit more about that storytelling aspect. Why is that so important for that age group?
So the storytelling, the idea of using storytelling for the program, it came about in a pretty easy discussion because storytelling is so important in the local First Nations culture. And so it just made a lot of sense to bring that into the program. And the grade 3 kids, you know, they're still at the age where they love a good story and they're going to sit and listen attentively and they'll remember a story that's told, you know, with a little bit of drama in a great storytelling way a lot more than just standing up and giving them information.
Right, okay. And can you tell me a little bit more about the Kelowna Museums and the local school district's Aboriginal Education Department and how you two work together to put this program on?
Sure. So I can't take credit for fostering this partnership. This partnership began long before I was at the museum. So I'm very grateful that I got to kind of walk into it. And I think it's been happening since the 1970s.
Wow.
I've seen some old program guides from the 1970s where this partnership had begun. So that's pretty neat. And I think the reason that it works so well is because it's beneficial to the school district and to the museum. You know, we both get something really great out of it. And so what we do is at the museum, we book the program and the students come in and we run through most of the program. And then we have a cultural advocate who comes from the ABED department and spends the last hour with the kids. And they teach the kids Lahal, which is an ancient stick game that's been played here. Who knows for how long? They always ask the question, how long? And the answer is usually maybe a couple hundred years, maybe a couple thousand years. And so I love that the cultural advocate comes and plays a game. It has that really cool fun factor that the kids love. But then it also goes into a great conversation about why the game was originally played, and then the fact that the game is still being played today. So it bridges that gap between that misconception that the culture is not around anymore. And so the kids get to see these young adults from the First Nations community talking about how they play this game with their friends and they go to tournaments. So it's a really neat aspect to the program.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that something that was around in those sort of early 1970s program guides? Like, you've talked about how this program has been around for a long time, but how has it changed through the course of the last 20, 30 years?
The program has changed a lot. So some of those early guides I found, they actually brought the kids to Knox Mountain, which is a mountain just on the outskirts of downtown. And they climbed up the mountain and were in nature, which is really cool. But I kind of, in my mind, when I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, taking a whole class of kids up a mountain, that's kind of a big deal. And also the cultural advocates didn't always bring the stick games or the lahal into the museum to play with the kids. When I began here, they had somebody who came and did puppets, which is equally cool, but very different. Mm-hmm. Goes with the storytelling theme. And the stick games, they've been doing that for a couple of years now. And I think the reason that they changed from doing puppets to stick games is because they have a couple of young adults that work in the AbEd department who, say, play stick games, who know all the songs, and so they're taking that strength and saying, well, let's bring that into the museum.
Right, cool. And how did that change with the new curriculum in schools?
So the new curriculum changed the program quite a bit. The program for years was actually a grade 4 program. It worked really well with the grade 4 curriculum. And with the new curriculum, I guess that was 2 years ago now, it didn't really make sense for grade 4 anymore. The grade 4s now, they talk about European settlement, they talk about demographic changes, and we really wanted to keep that more pre-contact, that connection to the earth theme throughout the program. So we moved the program down to grade 3. It works great with the curriculum, but then there was a snowball effect where the activities that we had planned for grade 4s, they don't work with grade 3s. As grade 3s and grade 4s are developmentally very different. And so that's with the grade 3s, we have more of that fun aspect, more of the storytelling that works better with their level. So with the new curriculum and moving the grade, we really, really had to overhaul the program as far as what activities would keep the kids engaged. And every time we do big changes like that, we invite people from the AbEd department and also from elsewhere in the school district to come and, you know, we say, hey, just come and watch the program and give us your feedback and whatnot. So we're getting, you know, verification that we're on the right track and doing the right thing with the program.
Right. It sounds like it's quite a cool program, quite a neat partnership between the school district and the museum. And it sounds like the students are getting a lot out of it, even with some of those changes. So can you sort of share some of the highlights, you know, according to the teachers or the students that have participated?
Yeah, sure. So like probably most museum education programs, we try to get feedback. We send out feedback forms. And we get a lot of somewhat predictable feedback. You know, we've discovered what the kids and the students and the teachers really like about the program. One of the highlights is they get to climb the Warrior's Ladder. Mm-hmm. So we have this beautiful recreation of a winter home that was, the building of it in the museum was led by Elder Eric Mitchell. And the Warrior Ladder goes right up the middle of the winter home, and it's a different exit, so up the roof. And the Warrior's Ladder is built purposely a little bit steep and a little bit high, and Eric talks about how it's a way to help overcome some fears. And what we do is we bring the kids into the winter home. They get to eat an apple that's donated by Nature's Fair as we talk about family and being in the home, and then they get to climb the Warrior's Ladder. And it's really cool. Some of the kids, you know, get super excited about it. Some of the kids are nervous at first and then do overcome those fears. And then they come back the next year for a different program, and they excitedly talk about how last year they climbed the ladder. So So that's a huge highlight. Now, from the teacher's perspective, especially since the new curriculum came into play, the teachers are letting us know that some of the big themes that we bring up in the program, they're able to take those back to the classroom and then expand on them a little bit. So they're able to, say, use some of the things that we introduce and then go into them a little bit deeper. So I'm glad that they're able to do that and expand it back into the classroom.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a really neat program, and thanks very much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Indigenous topics in museum education, and many other topics as well, can feature some difficult content for school kids. Chelsea Forsyth finds out how Nanaimo Museum's Far From Home program brings critical thinking activities and safe spaces to the history of students in residential schools along the BC coast.
We're here at the Nanaimo Museum. My name is Chelsea, and I'm here with Amy Greenaway, the curator of the Nanaimo Museum. First of all, we would like to acknowledge and thank the Sanaimo people whose land we reside on. We value the opportunity to learn, live, and share educational experiences here.
This theme today is all about education, and I asked her to talk a little bit about one of the education programs that we have here at the Nanaimo Museum. So can you tell us a little bit about the Far From Home program?
Definitely. So the Far From Home program is the second year that we've offered a program on the residential school experience in Canada. To give you an idea of what happens in the program, the students show up and we give them a PowerPoint presentation where we show images and maps and we talk about residential schools that are on the coast of British Columbia. There wasn't a residential school rate in Nanaimo, so we look at other schools that were on Vancouver Island. We look at colonization in Nanaimo, and we basically just run through a timeline of events that led up to residential schools and also what children experienced, because that's really the focus of the program, is what was the day-to-day life like for a student. While we're doing those presentations, we're very focused on not being the person talking all the time. So for each PowerPoint slide we're looking at, there's an inquiry question trying to get discussion from the students and get them talking about their thoughts on residential schools and what, so we can learn a bit about what the students already know. We take them on an exhibit tour, so we talk about the potlatch ban while looking at cultural belongings and look a little bit at the traditional life of the Nanaimo prior to contact and how some of these colonizing policies affected the Nanaimo. The activity for this program is called Reading a Photograph, and it's a critical thinking challenge. And it's based on archival images of students who are at residential schools, and the students in the program, they are paired off and they answer questions about the historical photograph. First they do observations, keeping in mind these kids are 10, and then they work on inferences like why was this photograph taken, and is it possible this photo was staged? And if it was, what was the motivation of the person who took it when they were staging it? So just getting them to think about the images that they're seeing.
Okay, and so can you tell us a little bit about the stages of development for this program? Like, where did it all start?
A couple of years ago, BC developed all new elementary school and some high school curriculum, and that brought in historical injustices to the grade 5 curriculum. One of the historical injustices was looking at the history of residential schools in Nanaimo. The Far From Home program was driven by new BC curriculum that was launched a couple of years ago, and it included historical injustices into the grade 5 social studies curriculum, and one of those injustices was residential schools. Whenever we develop a new program that relates to First Nations, we have an advisor Her name is Geraldine Manson, and she's been working with the museum for over 20 years on our school programs and also on our exhibit development. And I met with Geraldine and I asked her for permission to do a program. I wanted to make sure that she thought that it was okay for us to deliver the program, knowing that the two staff who would be primarily delivering it were settlers, and did she think that that was okay? And her main advice was to make sure that the program was based on images, and that was the inspiration for the activity being focused on archival images of residential schools.
What were the major challenges that you had along the way to developing this program?
A big one was just how to present the topic and what type of information to include. So we looked at the level of detail. So we decided not to focus as much on abuse. We talk about there being abuse, but explicit details are left out. We really focus on the experience of children day to day. So deprivation through not receiving adequate food, and also from being deprived of their relationships with their families by being at the schools. Another one that we looked at was trauma, and that as museum program facilitators, we don't know these students. A lot of the teachers know the students' backgrounds, but we certainly don't. They just show up for an hour and a half and then they go back to school. So we were really mindful that we didn't know what the students' backgrounds were and that it was a possibility that we could trigger trauma. So thinking that through, we start the program out by preparing them that it is a difficult topic, and we run through some of the emotions that they might feel when they're learning information about it or talking about residential schools. We give them the option to leave the room if they feel like things are too intense for them, that they need to take a bit of a break. And lastly, the person who's running the program is always evaluating the kids for expression and body language to see if there's anything going on that looks like they might be having some problems emotionally. And if that was the case, we would bring the teacher in to help us deal with that.
Perfect. So is there any advice that you might give to any of the other museums or cultural centers who are thinking about having a program such as this, or anything to do with a difficult topic for children?
I think the big thing for me was I felt really intimidated to even approach a subject like that. And just, I think it's really important to not shy away from challenging topics. My main advice for that would be making sure that you have connections with elders in your area so that you can get guidance on whether or not you should do the program, and if you should, what that program should look like. And lastly, the big one is to keep it within your region so that it has more meaning for the students and more meaning for your connecting with your mandate.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks to Chelsea and Amy for taking us through the Far From Home program. You can learn more about this program at nanaimomuseum.ca. A quick break now to tell you about the BCMA conference. Are you joining us in Kelowna from October 21st to 23rd? We are excited to have our full conference program available now on the BCMA website. Plan your conference experience and see all our great sessions by visiting bit.ly/BCMAconference. You can also read about our two keynotes, Dr. Joseph Wask and Megan Richardson, get yourself registered for our special pre-conference workshop, and submit your conference bursary applications, all online. Remember, bursary applications have to be in by September 1st. And don't forget, regular registration ends September 14th, so don't miss out. All information about conference is available at bit.ly/BCMAconference. A special news item is that we have a new Indigenous Cultural Competency pre-conference workshop bursary available now. This special bursary is for people attending the pre-conference workshop, though it will also help cover the cost of attendance for the rest of conference. We have a few bursaries available, up to $2,600, so get on your applications soon. Those have been extended to September 7th. Check online for more details, and once again, that's bit.ly bit.ly/BCMA conference. Museum education is definitely something to talk about, and my friends Aaron Henshaw and Michael Schwartz had a long talk about it a few weeks ago. We asked them to talk again and record their hour-long session, but this time to do it in 10 minutes or less, just for you here on the podcast. Take a listen.
Hi, I'm Michael Schwartz. I'm the Director of Community Engagement at the Jewish Museum and Archives of BC. I've been in this role for 5 years, and been a really exciting job. Been able to be really involved with the community and working to increase awareness about the organization more broadly within the community and beyond the community, partnering with lots of different arts organizations and community groups from throughout Vancouver and BC.
So today on the podcast, we're talking about museum education, and I always like to ask people, when you hear the phrase museum education, what does that mean to you?
Museum education. When we spoke a couple of weeks ago, we talked about this, and I think that museum education is a term that means different things to different people, and perhaps had one meaning that is growing into a new meaning. As we go forward, I think that museums should no longer be necessarily about bestowing information to people, but really being a place where people can come together and gather and share information amongst themselves more equitably. Which is to say that, like, we shouldn't take it upon ourselves to assume that we know everything or that we're somehow uniquely versed to decide what is worth knowing. But I think that we do have a talent for bringing people together, for organizing events, for being familiar with setting a scene in which people feel comfortable to share and to ask questions and to enter into dialogue. And I think the museums can fill the gap in a sense and be a place where everyone feels comfortable to share the knowledge that they personally have, that their community has, and learn a bit more about other communities that they are neighbors with. And through this, I think that the guiding objective shouldn't necessarily be knowledge, but should be empathy. At the risk of being like overly idealistic, that museums can somehow bring about world peace. I think that we can, in a sense, help to be a place, be a forum where those ideas can convene, where people can talk about things that are difficult, histories that are challenging and traumatizing, and just increase understanding about who we're sharing this world with.
If you can summarize, like in a nutshell,
yeah,
museum education, and I really liked what you said about empathy, but in a nutshell, what is museum education or what should it be?
I think that museum education is at a point of redefinition, and that empathy must be central to what we seek to do. I think that traditionally museum education has been a very top-down initiative, and I think that there isn't really a place for that in today's world, but rather there are there's an acceptance that different people have different forms of knowledge that need to be heard to make a more holistic society. And museums can play a centering role in bringing those voices together and making sure that everyone is heard and that everyone feels that their wisdom and their point of view and their history have deep value, and that through understanding one another's histories and points of views, we can build a more empathic society.
How does that look like on a physical sense? When I come into a museum or cultural institution, what can we do as people working in the field? How can we accomplish this idea of museums that are empathetic?
Well, I think that how we accomplish this is that we reach an understanding that basically our objective is storytelling and knowledge sharing. We need to approach that mandate with a certain level of humility, that individually we're not experts in everything, but we do have the ability to bring people together to share their specific expertise. And that expertise can be the kind of expertise that you get with a PhD in whatever, political theory or microbiology or something. But that expertise can also mean First Nations approaches to, let's say, conflict resolution or wisdom about local foliage. Or it can be an awareness of history, you know, firsthand experiences. So I think that we have already started down this road. Certainly leaders in the community are in the museum's world are already doing this, and I think that the rest of us need to get on board. You know, the knowledge that we are here to share isn't necessarily in academic journals, but is in community partners who we can bring into the room to share their wisdom, to share their story with one another and with the general public.
It's a lot more relational than it is like textbook based, it seems.
Yeah, I think if we, you know, expand our understanding of knowledge, what constitutes knowledge, then we as the museum professionals simply play a facilitating role of bringing everyone together, of bringing the relevant people into the room to be heard.
Now, have you seen an exhibit where you think this was done well at your own museum or somewhere else? Like, have you experienced this in a museum before?
I think that the work that the Museum of Anthropology is doing recently has been really aligned with this way of thinking. The recent exhibit that they did specifically about art in Latin America, that there was a form of resistance, but as in the state of mind of helping us to view art, that specific art, in a different way beyond its aesthetic value, deeper into its societal value, and being able to understand the intentions of the artist felt along this line of thinking.
That was a lot shorter than our first initial phone call, but
a lot shorter.
We've got, okay. Yeah, no,
you're
but
kind
it was
of packed a lot into this episode. It's exciting.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael, and thank you for your thoughts on museum education. This has been really refreshing. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
One of the things I love about educators is that they love to collaborate. There's no better example of this than the Lower Mainland Museum Educators Group, a grassroots community of informal educators working to support each other and develop professional practice in museum and cultural education fields. The BCMA was lucky enough to be invited to their annual one-day conference this past January, and we had a great time seeing so many passionate educators learning from each other. I called up one of the group's organizers, Lorenda Calvert, who is also an educator at the Burnaby Village Museum, to learn about what the group means to educators in the Lower Mainland.
All right, well, hello, Lorinda, and thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So, Lorinda, you are part of the Lower Mainland Museum Educators Group. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is and sort of what your role is there?
Sure. So the Lower Mainland Museum Educators started as meetups for informal educators. So that's largely educators from museum settings. But we have a lot of people who come who don't identify as museum educators because they work at more like science centers. So it started back as just like getting together every 2 months, having guest lecturers come and present, and then having a chance for ourselves to discuss a network and sort of vent or ask questions and get answers. And then I think it's 2 years ago now, the Lower Mainland Museum Educators started a conference. So now there's an annual conference, not just with a focus on education, but it's open to all museum employees or sort of all kind of informal educators. Now we're just planning the one for 2019.
What is it that really draws those people together in terms of shared interests or commonalities? What is it that people get from joining this group and being a part of this group?
I mean, for me, what I definitely get out of it is getting a chance to connect with my peers. I know when I was starting out of the museum field, it was definitely a good opportunity to network. I got to meet people and put faces to names that I was hearing about. But now, as I'm a little bit more established into my career, I just think it's a really great chance to meet with other people and ask, you know, are you going through this? Have you experienced that? Did you have a solution for this? What are your thoughts on this? I have a theory about that kind of stuff. And just getting an opportunity to sit down and chat together and maybe have a cup of tea. And that's totally what's most valuable for me. And I think for other informal educators, that's valuable for them. Sometimes you're the only educator in your entire museum or place of employment, and you don't have anyone else to bounce these ideas off of.
All right, so it's a little bit more of a almost like a support network as well as a professional development opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's amazing to have guest lecturers come out and have an opportunity to learn something, but I think it's even better to have a chance afterwards to discuss, you know, what I'm taking away from that guest lecturer or what I might be able to put in place in my place of work or what I will never be able to put in place at my place of work because of these challenges and, you know, do you have those challenges as well kind of stuff.
So can you tell me what your role in LMME is and sort of what you're doing with the group?
Sure. So I'm part of the Lower Mainland Museum Educators executive team. So it's all volunteer based. And part of that executive team, I'm in charge of the social media and website. So I look after keeping our website up to date, and I created the website itself, and then I look after the Twitter account and Facebook. And then I'm also part of the conference planning team that's part of LMME. And this year I'm actually the chair. So previously I was in charge of the marketing section, and this year I get to plan, be the chair for the whole conference and make sure everything went smoothly. So that's pretty exciting. And then I am a part of the organization just as being a member to it and attending the sessions and exchanging ideas with others.
Do you want to give a shout out to what the URL is for the website?
Sure. So it's www.lmmuseumeducators.com.
All right. And in that title itself, you sort of hear the LM, the Lower Mainland thing. What about people who live outside of the Lower Mainland? How can they either be involved with you or get something like this going in their community?
Yeah. Lower Mainland, LMME has been around since the 90s, and it started out as a very local grassroots organization. That's why we still have Lower Mainland in our title. But we started branching out and trying to support informal educators in other neighborhoods of BC by attending the BCMA and being out there trying to get our name out there. And we're totally welcome to encourage anyone from BC to attend in our sessions and to engage with us on our website and social media. But we're also super interested in helping those other communities know more about how we got started and how they could start their own, just because there's so much value in having such a local network of peers and a local network of people you can chat with and people who are going through the very same things you are. So that's something that we've been chatting with for some communities in the interior and giving them some tips on how we got started and all the work that it takes to keep LMME running so that they can sort of start their own if they have the means or have us support them in starting their own.
And what do you think in terms of some of those communities that may not have a lot of museums or cultural centers? What is sort of a way that an educator, an informal educator, can develop, can stay connected to people, whether mm-hmm. within their field or just other educators? What are some sort of key ideas you might be able to pass on to them?
Sure. Yeah. So I think you folks over at BCMA have made it super easy to still be connected with the community through your webinars and through this podcast, as well as the conferences and the resources you have available on your website. LMME's website also has areas like a forum so people can post their own questions and exchange. We also have our own listserv similar to BCMA where you can post questions and get engagement with people all over as opposed to just in your local community. But I think also a good way to still stay connected is continuing to read articles and be involved on exchanges and on social media like Museum Hour, which isn't hosted in Canada. It's, I think, the UK. And that's a good way just to see what other peers globally are dealing with and what their advice is and just sort of what the feel of being an informal educator is and what's going on in the whole community. So those are my suggestions.
Now, educators are definitely all about learning. It's usually how they help learners learn. But what about educators themselves learning? What's something that you think is sort of key for an educator in continuing to develop as they move forward?
Well, I did my master's in museum education at UBC, so in a formal context, that was super valuable for me to have that opportunity and to exchange ideas and thoughts and actually get the formal pedagogy. But in an informal context, I think it's super valuable to continue to be engaged in what's going on in the community and what teachers are looking for if you're an informal educator in a school program capacity, being involved in what the new curriculum is, engaging with things like teacher focus groups or attending professional development days so that you are aware of what your audience is looking for. UBC has a lot of workshops, so does UVic, that are like small week-long workshops where you can still be engaged in that sort of formal aspect of education, but that you can take back to your own workplace. Same as attending conferences like LMME and BCMA, having opportunities to continue hearing about what's happening at different museums, what people are doing, how they got there, how they undertook it, and what you can take away from that to your own site. And just continuing that, you can't just, you know, finish your BA or finish your master's and then never look at that topic again. It's always changing, just like, you know, your instruction is always changing and we're always growing ourselves. And it's super important to have lifelong learning and finding ways to build that into your schedule, whether it's just online or going to meetups or things like that.
And for people that aren't educators, what do you think they need to learn about educators in the museum and cultural sector environment?
In my experience, informal educators are super keen on finding a way to collaborate with other departments within their institute, and they're really hoping that you'll say yes to attend a meeting to discuss an idea, or they're really hoping that you'll say yes to an idea that they already have that they just want to give a try. So I would just say to other museum employees who have an informal educator coming up and asking them some questions, just to be super open to their ideas and giving them a chance to give it a go and just see what happens and what you guys can accomplish together.
Cool. So what's next for LMME?
What's next for LMME? Well, we're just starting to plan our fall speaker series. So we're looking for venues to host our speakers. And then we're also just doing some final planning for the conference that happens in January. It's going to be January 28th, 2019.
Cool. Well, best of luck with that. And thank you for telling us about it today.
Thanks so much. It's my pleasure.
If you're looking for more opportunities to hear about museum projects around BC and to connect with your colleagues across the province, then join us in Kelowna for our annual conference. We'll be meeting from October 21st to 23rd at the Delta Okanagan Grand Resort, right on the shores of Lake Okanagan for 3 days of informative conference sessions, networking, and fun in Kelowna's wonderful museums and galleries. Registration is open now through September 14th, but tickets are going fast, so don't miss out. The conference features over 50 speakers, keynote presentations from Dr. Yosef Wask and the Virtual Museum of Canada's Megan Richardson, and a special pre-conference workshop focusing on Indigenous cultural competencies. We have two bursary programs available to help people come to conference, but applications close September 1st and September 7th, so check our website now. To learn more about conference, our sessions, and how to register, visit bit.ly/BCMAconference. That's all the time we have this month. My thanks to Chelsea, Aaron, Jen, Amy, Michael, and Lorenda for joining the podcast this episode. The BCMA podcast will be back next month, but in the meantime, subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play and listen to past episodes on the BCMA website at museumsassn.bc.ca. On a personal note, this is my last episode as host of the BCMA podcast, as I head off next month to museum work in another province. My thanks to everyone who joined me and contributed to the podcast over the past 5 months, from my first guest, Luke Desmarais, to international friends at Museums on the Web, and my last talk with Lorenda here this episode. And of course, a big thanks to you for listening right now. Thanks to the BCMA team for dreaming up a podcast and supporting it through the summer as it's grown to this episode. It's been a lot of fun, and I'll be listening to future episodes, as I hope you will be too. The BC Museums Association receives operational support from the BC Arts Council. We also gratefully acknowledge the support of the Royal BC Museum in providing a home for the BCMA Secretariat. The BCMA Secretariat is located on the traditional lands of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations.